Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery channel.
Here we are! It's time for another Garbled Twistery adventure! And today, we're talking about the seventh and final vice principal candidate for 1804. He's the man you thought was retired, but apparently isn't retired! I think this might be our fourth episode on him or some nonsense. George Clinton! Yep, he's back, baby. And because he's back, this is going to be a rebroadcast. So if you've heard the George Clinton story too many times and want to just skip to the new chapter, you can find that at the 16-minute and 9-second mark. All right, so let's get that tape rolling. It all started with some baguette and powwow warrant colonel named Charlie, who was married to some lady named Elizabeth. They were both Irish immigrants and stuff, and they popped out our current main character and named him Curious George, and his brother too, named James. But who cares about him? Let's talk about George. So, our buddy Jorge Clinton was born in Little Britain, which was this weird province in New York. I don't know. British America was weird geographically, okay? But yeah, he wanted to be a burly man in the army, just like his dad. So he went on a boat and threw anchors or whatever the sailors with guns do for training, and he joined his local militia. You know, the one where his dad was a freaking colonel? And all it took was a baguette and powwow war for Jorge Clinton to become a freaking lieutenant! Oh yeah! I mean, he earned it, because he helped his dad, like, stop the baguettes from getting a whole lot of food during the war in some battle over some fort that happened in the land of maple syrup. Okay, so there was this dude named George Clinton, who wasn't our George Clinton, but he really, really, really liked our George Clinton's dad. Why? Well, Colonel Charlie Clinton did like a full survey of how New York was doing, and apparently it was the bee's knees. Yeah. George Clinton sat there and did the thing that you see only in movies about either the stock market or early dictatorships. Quote, "Oh, goody. This survey truly is the bee's knees. I am so very, very impressed that I want to hire your son so hard that he will have the same job for 52 years straight," unquote. Yeah, the first legacy job offer was for Jorge Clinton to be a sheriff of New York, but our guy was like, quote, "What do I look like, an extra from Law & Order SVU?" unquote. So yeah, instead our guy took the other George Clinton's job when George Clinton got tired and retired. You want the job title? Okay. He was the clerk of Ulster County Court of Common Pleas. This was his job for like 52 years. When the French powwow war ends, he studies in the city to become a lawyer. Clerk of Ulster County Court of Common Pleas, New York Provincial Assembly, being political in New York just like John Jay. So yeah, during all this political ladder climbing and tomfoolery, I tell you, people start like shooting at each other on the intersection of Lexington and Concord. And at Continental Con, everyone decided to make a bunch of forts on the Hudson River. You know,
for the nice view.
And they told our guy, Jorge Clinton, to do all the house hunters nonsense that was required to get those forts built. And they also told him to, like, freaking protect the hilly parts on the side of the Hudson River and stuff. So to do that, he made two forts, and then he...
Wait, are you serious?
And then he...
There is no way.
I'm sorry, I have to cue in the Dynasty Warriors music for this one. That's more like it! So the other idea that Jorge Clinton came up with was to put a giant freaking chain across the freaking Hudson River to stop the tea-sipping boats. Like, oh, you thought this was a history podcast? Nope, it's anime! So yeah, after finding some schmuck to take his job, he got himself elected as the freaking governor of New York, and everybody re-elected him like 5 freaking times, because That's how anime fandoms work, I guess. But yeah, even though he was fully doing the pencil pusher job of being the governor, he was still like being a super general guy in the Continental freaking army. So if any comparison should be made, this guy was basically Mike Hagar, okay? And nobody messes around with Mike Hagar. Oh, and the guy absolutely hated loyalists. I got a quote right here. Quote, I swear my mother's vegan pecan pie, I will make every two-faced, yellow-bellied loyalist I come into contact with pay. Unquote. Yeah, he meant that, like, literally. Like, if you were a loyalist and he found out about it, he would literally walk into your house, rip up the floorboards, take the family heirloom, sell it on the market, and use the funds to keep the taxes from going up. I mean, what can I say? He was the governor of New York. Jorge Washington was also, like, his chum. Like, Jorge Clinton gave him some helpful corn chip deliveries at Valley Forge, and he also tag-teamed with Washington in some crazy negotiation in Dobbs Ferry to stop the tea-sippers from, like, loitering around after the war and stuff, too. And Jorge Clinton also, like, joined this weird after-school club called the Society of Cincinnati. I don't know. I think it was just, like, the Real Housewives, but, like, for men or something.
I really don't get it.
All right, let's just shift the topic here. So remember episode 28, 877 Land Now? It was about how Vermont hated everybody trying to take their land, so they became their own country for a hot second. Well, during that time, they were like desperately trying to become a part of the Union. Like, they kept asking, pretty please, and kept getting told a blunt, cold no. And who was doing all this political gymnastics to make sure Vermont couldn't become a U.S. state? Freaking Jorge Clinton. Vermont just couldn't get any gosh darn respect around here. Like, Jorge Clinton even wrote a very, very disrespectful letter to Vermont in 1778. Quote, please end your pathetic excuse for an attempt at joining the Union. Independence is futile. Join the dark side. New York will consume you. Consume. Unquote. And in like 1784, Jorge Clinton went around with his big boy pants on, asking his delegate friends if he could use brute force to literally like take over Vermont. And he also threatened to leave the Union over it because he was just being a greedy, petty onion head that year, I guess. And everybody noticed this. So they tried to, like, put Vermont in the Union out of freaking spite, I guess. But Jorge literally pulled out all the stops and stopped that from happening again. So, like, 6 years after that, Jorge Clinton wasn't all that pressed about it anymore. And he was like, quote, okay, Congress. If you just make it a state already, I'll stop bothering you about it, unquote. And that's exactly what Congress did. There's a lesson here. If you really want Congress to do something, bother them for about a year, at least a year, you know, and then tell them that once they do something, you'll stop bothering them. Works like a charm. So, like, who was Jorge Clinton, politically speaking? I'll lay it out, because he's kind of a complex weirdo. So, when Alexander Hammy Tammy was all mad and stuff, and was all like, the Articles of Confederacy suck and we gotta fix this nonsense, unquote, Jorge Clinton was like, totally on board with the idea. Until Alexander Hammy Tammy started freaking talking about letting Congress tax everybody. Like, New York is supposed to tax everybody, not Congress. Taxes are New York's thing. Like, New York's entire income, basically. That said, Jorge Clinton hated the freaking Constitution. Like, he would print out copies of the Constitution and, like, pee on them for fun. Like, that's how much he hated the thing. But all his friends weren't all that mad about it, and, like, it got ratified in New York anyways. However, instead of taking that L with dignita, he immediately started trying to work within the system to take power away from, like, big government. Anyways, there were these anti-federalist papers that were, like, being passed around that basically explained Jorge's feelings about all this Constitution stuff, and some history nerd named Herbert thinks he wrote them. But there's no way to, like, prove that, you know? Still haven't figured that one out yet. But yeah, we are dreadfully close to the first election season, so I'm gonna stop here. If you're just aching to hear more, I guess you're just gonna have to wait for another election where this guy pops up as an A-list candidate, alright?
And the wait is over.
It's been a couple of years since the last election, and this bozo is up to his shenanigans yet again at the presidential ballots! What do I mean by shenanigans? I mean going to, like, secret meetings or whatever and trying to come up with ways to backstab the Federalists that aren't as cool as Jorge Washington. Oh, I mean, I made it sound like Jorge Clinton was leading the charge on this or something, but let me explain better. So Jorge Washington was doing his first presidency dance and stuff, right? I'll talk more about his shenanigans later. But right now, we want to look at the treasurer, the country's money man, Alexander Hammy Tammy. Yeah, he was getting on a lot of people's nerves, okay? Why? Well, I think this opposition got started after Alexander Hammy Tammy dropped the
first report on the public credit.
Yeah, it was basically a big fat pamphlet that was unflinchingly talking about how crazy the government money situation had already become and how the government should fix this nonsense. I have the document right here in my hand and it says, quote, "I'm sorry, y'all. We're in debt. We're in quite a lot of debt, okay? Like, we're gonna need to make a government credit card and pay the interest later, cause we literally won our independence on layaway, okay? And we can't just pay it up front and be done with it without a system to borrow, cause, like, what's gonna happen when we need money again? Life will be easier down the road if we just make a government credit card. Okay, guys? Oh, and side note, we're not gonna pay back the people who currently have contracts saying that we pay them back. We gotta save the money, okay?" Unquote. That last part. That made a whole lot of people mad. Like James Madison, who was all like, quote, "Look, the people who have control over the contracts currently probably need the money a lot less than the people we originally promised the money. Like the war vets we gave a bunch of IOUs to. We should pay them the same amount we're paying their lawyers for holding the contract," unquote. And then Alexander Hammy Tammy was all like, quote, "No, that's a waste of money, you dunce," unquote. Yeah. And then James Madison started having secret meetings in the Room of Requirement that included Federalists and Anti-Federalists and every in-between to sit around and gossip about how freaking un-American Alexander Hammy Tammy was, okay? Yeah. Your boy James went full Order of the Phoenix about this situation. And this anti-establishment club turned into the freaking Democratic Republican Party when enough people started showing up. Yeah, and they kept being a thorn in Alexander Hammy Tammy's side. For example, when Alexander was all like, "Yo, we need a bank," the Democratic Republican Party was all like, "We don't need a bank, we farm carrots." And who was spearheading the political party when election season was coming up? The mac and cheese man himself, Tommy Jefferson. So yeah, when 1792 came around, there was a freaking battle, okay? Like, Jorge Clinton, like, made an appointment to see the cheese man in his private quarters, and Jorge Clinton said, quote, "Look, I know how you freaking hate Alexander Hammy Tammy and his money-grubbing money-grubbers, and I think with this election, if y'all can get me to beat Johnny Adams and I become the true Jackson VP, I'll stop this money madness for you," unquote. And the cheese man was all like, "Sure, you have my blessing. I'll tell all my friends to vote for you. Go get 'em, Tiger. Stick it to the man."
After 1792, things kind of toned down for our dude Jorge Clinton. As you already might know from the most recent Johnny J episode, Mr. Clinton was being a sleazebag by stealing the governor's election through a freaking technicality. But I mean, everybody knew that he was a sleazebag for that, so basically nobody trusted him with anything. And on top of that, his daughter married some crazy French ambassador who was like constantly insulting George Washington and actively screwing up the foreign relations strategy. And on top of that, he had like arthritis or something, so he was sick and tired all the time, and he was like, quote, "I'm done. I can't go to Albany anymore because my knees hurt. I'm done. Johnny J, you're the governor. Please don't vote for me for prez in 1796. I'm not a candidate. I don't want to run. I have arthritis," unquote. But guess what? This dude still got 7 votes in the 1796 election. And guess what? If those 7 votes went to the person from the same party who got the most votes, the second president would have been a different person entirely.
But
whatever. The man's retired. Or is he? Because he just straight up ran for some paper pusher government position and like jumped right back into the New York legislature again. And the only reason he did this was because Vice Principal Burr told him to. And Jorge was probably thinking, quote, "Okay, I'm just doing my buddy Aaron a favor by being a Democrat Republican elector for Tommy. Yeah, Tommy J. No big deal. I'll retire when I'm done. Yeah. Unquote. I mean, if that was your game plan, bro, I just have to say, well, that's too bad, because everybody wanted George Clinton to be the governor of New York again. So he was just tiptoeing back and forth. I'm on the fence, I'm off the fence, I'm on the fence, I'm off the fence, I'm on the fence, I'm off the fence. But Aaron Bupkis Burr would change that nonsense real fast. How? Well, Jorge Clinton worked with him before in the New York Assembly, and he liked Aaron as a person. But he never trusted that man, and he had his suspicions, I tell you what. And when Aaron Burr and Tommy J freaking tied in 1800 for that prezzy-wezzy position, only for Aaron Burr to say, "Nah, I'm going for it, I won't concede," instead of falling in line like a proper Democrat Republican, it was over as far as George Clinton's trust was concerned. And after Tommy J won the tiebreaker, George Clinton's nephew was all like, quote, "Aaron can't just sit there and not resign after making such a blatant and disrespectful power move, can he? And if he does, he's totally gonna run for governor of New York. You gotta stop him, uncle," unquote. Apparently, all it took was a lame prediction with an empty threat to George's thunder to get him to go into politics real hard again. But hey, he did end up as governor of New York again, cause really, who else are you gonna vote for at this point, George has been in the business forever, dude. But I mean, the whole George Clinton is a New York governor song and dance was starting to get old, because his nephew was the new hot tamale on the proverbial political street, okay? But luckily, George found his way into prezzy-wezzy Tommy J's pocket. How so? Well, Aaron Burr was being super-duper passive-aggressive and annoying, and Tommy J was straight up sick of that guy. Quote, "I really don't need this passive-aggressive zippity-doo-dah in my life right now, but I don't want to get on the bad side of my homies in New York either. You know what? I'm cutting out Ice Cream Aaron. Someone else can be like the shadow vice president or whatever," unquote. That someone else? George Clinton. So now Tommy J's already talking to George Clinton about stuff that he's supposed to be talking about with Aaron Burr, and this election is coming in hot, and it looks like George Clinton's already got the vice principal gig, because Tommy's grooming him like nobody's business. And on top of that, his uppity nephew is out here helping him up like one of those people who tried to sell you a pair of socks on Guerrero Street. But what do I know? There's a whole lot of VP candidates this time around, dude. If you got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, weird hitboxes, you can find Garble Twistry on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to garbletwistry.net and send a message in the contact section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q, at garbletwistry.net. Also, I have a Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, find Garble Twistry and become a patron, you'll gain not only the access, but you'll gain the ability to determine what topics get to be Patreon-exclusive bonus content. I know, exciting. There are more details about how this will work on the Patreon page. But wait, there's more. If you become a patron of $5 or more, you'll get full access to an entire Patreon-exclusive season titled Garble Twistry, A Second Look. These episodes will be primarily remakes of my earlier, sloppier episodes, along with many entirely new episodes to tag along. And now, per tradition, I'm giving you the standings of the current bonus episode suggestions. Spider-Man, $10. The Northwest Indian War, $0. Benedict Arnold, $0. The New Weird Conspiracy, $0. History of West Point Academy, $0. History of Ohio, $0. Oni Judge, $0. Southeastern Ceremonial Complex, $0. Your patronage can totally go to one of those if you want, or you can bring whatever topic you want into the mix. I'm serious. If you want to make me talk about the history of Baby Bell Cheese, I'll do it with your patronage. Anything. Or you can offer your patronage just to see bonus content. That's cool too. All you gotta do is search for Garble Twistery at patreon.com. Anyways, next time we're done with all the VP candidates, and now it's time for the big kahuna candidates for 1804. Yep, it's time to check in with a Prezi Wezi candidate we've talked about before, Charlie Piccaninny. See you next time.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
Hot tamale on the proverbial political street.